Good afternoon. My name is Habib Haydarian, and I'm a program manager on the .NET team. My team specifically focuses on the .NET runtime, .NET framework, as well as things like setup and servicing. If you could have joined us for the session about 2 or 3 hours ago, you would have seen a high-level discussion around the .NET roadmap for the upcoming version of .NET. In this presentation and three more presentations tomorrow, we're going to cover a lot more in depth of what those features are, what the key benefits are, and how you can take advantage of them today. Just to set the context for this presentation, we're going to focus on .NET primarily for devices as well as client applications. Tomorrow, we're going to see a lot more on the server side of the house, where we're going to see all the new innovations around ASP.NET VNext and so forth. But if I could just walk you through this slide for a second and really focus on what it is that we're doing as far as .NET is concerned for VNext and beyond. We continue to invest heavily in the existing versions of .NET, and you're going to see that in a couple of slides. That's through .NET 4.5.1, 4.5.2, and eventually the next version as well. But we're also really looking very closely at where the industry is moving. As you might be well aware, .NET was born about 16 years ago, and a lot has changed since then. And we definitely want to make sure that .NET moves into the future, along with how everyone's practices and development environments are changing. But our level of investment essentially breaks down into three areas. One is making sure that your existing investments are well-preserved, and also you can easily move your investments into the future. The second one is around the device-first strategy, which is we really want to focus how we better enable building device applications, both on the Microsoft platform as well as cross-device. And last but not least, we're really looking at what is the best web stack and services stack that we can provide as far as the .NET developer is concerned. And on the bottom, what you see is all of our core investments that we're going to dig into heavily as far as our runtime and framework features are concerned. Just a brief look at what happened about 6 months ago. So 6 months ago, we shipped .NET 4.5.1 with Visual Studio 2013, and it has a bunch of features for developers, as well as folks who are really interested in performance, as well as the new Git libraries. And what's fascinating is since we shipped .NET 4.5.1, we just clicked over 600 million installs. So in about 6 months or so, we pushed .NET Framework 4.5.1 through Windows Update, and it's now installed on this many machines. Collectively, if you add up all the versions of .NET, there's a footprint of about 1.8 billion PCs that we cover right now. So it's a pretty mature as well as well-covered framework. And I briefly covered this in my previous session as well, but this week on Tuesday, we also just released .NET 4.5.2. And for those of you who remember when we released .NET 4.5.1, we made a promise that we'll continually update .NET as we see value and as we find issues that we need to fix for customers. So there are two big buckets we'll be focused on for .NET 4.5.2. First one, there are well over 150 bug fixes for compatibility, performance, and reliability. We went after the most important parts where we're getting lots of customer feedback. But on top of that, we've actually added six new features that are small but impactful. And if I can use a couple of examples, one is we received lots of feedback that customers want ASP.NET apps to reliably schedule async work items. And another one that we received lots of feedback on is with high DPI becoming very prevalent, customers want to move their existing Windows Forms investments forward. And we've now added the ability to be able to resize Windows Forms controls through the high DPI settings. And then there are a bunch of other investments and innovations that I'm not going to spend too much time on, since there's a lot more content we have to go through. But I would highly, highly encourage you to regularly keep up to date with our blog. We constantly push new content through our blog. So if you want to find out the latest and greatest on what's happening in .NET, in fact, we just published in our blog today. This is where you can find all the information. So where is the next generation of .NET going? Broadly, we are investing in three areas. One area that we're calling innovation. This is technology such as .NET Native, our next generation just-in-time compiler, and a brand new technology called SIMD, which I'll cover a lot more in detail shortly. The second bucket that we're focusing on is how do we make .NET cross-plat? By cross-plat, I mean the ability to write .NET applications that run on both Android and iOS devices. And third but not last, we're really focusing on this new initiative to embrace open source as well as openness in general. And the definition of openness isn't just source that is open. It's in the way that we document, we release our bits, as well as in how we interact with our developers out there, in both being able to see the source code as well as contribute back to .NET. One of the first things that I want to cover in depth is .NET Native. So a couple of weeks ago, we released a very early alpha of what we're referring to as .NET Native, which is essentially our next generation compiler in the cloud. And it's a really big departure from how we do .NET compilation today. So today, what happens is when you load up your IL code, it gets jitted. With .NET Native, we no longer jit the code. What actually happens is at compile time, your code gets compiled from IL to native architecture-specific code using the C++ backend optimizing compiler. And when the user opens up the application, it's actually running native code. There is no more IL that gets jittered in any shape or form. And the reason why we can do that is we're the fact that we're using the exact same compiler as C++. So for those of you who have had issues with .NET performance, especially with client applications, we really do hope that this will alleviate a number of the problems. However, the one thing I do want to mention, and I'll get more in detail later on, is the fact that 4v1.NET Native is supported for store applications, but we're working through various scenarios trying to get it to the other scenarios as well. If you're curious about what kind of performance improvements you can get with .NET Native, Wordament, who we've been working with for the last few months, they're seeing a tremendous gain by simply using .NET Native. They didn't have to change their code. They just used .NET Native to get these massive, massive performance gains. So in cold startup, warm startup, as well as working set, they've seen double-digit improvements in all areas. So what's the secret sauce behind .NET Native? I get asked that a lot. And it's really made of two components, and I'll go through these in detail. The first one is a runtime. What we did was we took the existing .NET runtime and we really, really shrunk it down. And in fact, by shrinking down, I mean if you were to look at the new runtime for .NET Native, which is a DLL called MRT.dll, which we affectionately call Mr. T, it's around 200 KB. That's all it is. And it's because the only thing that it contains now is just a garbage collector. There's no more jitting, and also the entire framework has been refactored. And the way we like to think about the problem is that with .NET Native, you get the productivity of C# and the performance of C++. So as I mentioned, for those who have always wanted the performance of C++, now you can have your cake and eat it too, essentially. And on the compiler side, as I said, the main thing that we did was we moved away from jitting and essentially are now doing static compilation using the exact same C++ compiler that ships in Visual C++. And that's how we got our gain. much, much smaller, leaner runtime and framework, and using the C++ compiler. What that means for you, developers, is that there are 8 key benefits. And that's what I mean about you can have your cake and eat it too. You get the exact same productivity enhancements as you do today with C Sharp and the Visual Studio IDE. The developer experience is exactly the same while you're debugging and editing your code. And also, for those of you who have done Windows Phone development, we're using the same compiler in the cloud technology where you simply upload IL to the cloud, and then in the cloud it gets compiled down to essentially architect-specific code, and then when the user, the end user, downloads the code, it's all architecture-specific. There's no more IL that gets ungenned on the machine. So you don't have to worry about servicing or anything like that way. And then on the performance side, not only are we getting a faster startup and a reduced working set, but there's also a key benefit that we can get through the C++ compiler. Because of static compilation, the C++ compiler can do amazing optimizations. And I truly mean amazing. And I'll show you that in a second, where the speed ups are absolutely incredible when it comes to the C++ optimizing compiler. For this release, we have support for both x64 and ARM32, and then x86, which we released today. There is runtime support, but there is no debugging support yet, and that's why I'm mentioning that x86 is coming. So you can go and download the toolset today to be able to play around with the bits. Let's talk about real-world apps. There are right now 5 applications in this store that are using .NET Native. So if you were to download any of these apps onto your Surface or any other Windows store compatible device, all of these apps are actually running .NET Native. And in fact, if you were to use something like Process Explorer on these things, you'll notice that you can't actually see any IL code loaded in any of the assemblies because it's all x86 or processor-specific instructions. Let's delve into the developer experience a little bit. What does it actually take for you to take your existing store application and then move it over to .NET Native? It's really 2 steps. And when I say 2 steps, these are specific to developer preview. The first step is you can enable .NET Native on your project, and then the second step is you actually have to make it processor specific because, as I mentioned, the C++ compiler needs to know which architecture it needs to compile the bits down to. Okay, let me briefly switch over to a demo right here so I can show you what I mean. This is now just a Windows Store application. In fact, what I can do is I can press Control-F5 to start it without a debugger so you can see what it does. It's just a very simple recipe book where the end user can basically order some meals. As it is right now, this application is written in C#. And the thing that you're seeing running now is actually using IL. There is no native code here at all. So how do I go about enabling .NET Native for this code? Okay. So the first step is right-click on your project, enable for .NET Native. And I want to point out a couple of things here. The first one is we will pop up a help page that shows you essentially all the goodies around .NET Native, including the simple steps that you need to take to enable .NET Native. But more importantly, we actually have a link as well as our email address down there where you can provide feedback as you evaluate .NET Native. The second thing that we do is we quickly scan the code to make sure if there are any bugs that we've encountered as far as the .NET Native is concerned, you have the opportunity to report those bugs back to Microsoft and help us improve the product. So this is essentially the form that you'll see as soon as .NET Native is done. And then last but not least, simply right-click on your project and then check the compile with native toolchain option. Once you've done that, go ahead and build the solution. And I always make sure I mention this to people, that .NET native is really an optimization step. What I mean by that is you'll notice that build time is taking many, many, many seconds. In fact, it really depends on the size of the application. So for this app, it can take up to 26 seconds to compile your app. And the reason why that's happening is as following. What happens is we take the C-sharp code, compile it down to IL, and then give that IL code to the C++ compiler. And what it's doing throughout then is it actually takes the IL code and it removes dependencies that it doesn't use. What I mean by that is that there's a technique called tree shaking where we get rid of all the uncalled API calls from the app, and then the C++ optimizing backend completely optimizes the IL into architecture-specific code, and the result is this. In fact, the one thing that you notice is it took 26 seconds to compile this app, versus if you were to do it normally, it would take you maybe a second. So really the idea is you build your application in the IDE as is, and then as you are about to deploy the app, you enable .NET Native, and then it goes and builds the application. So what I can do from here is I can simply launch the application. And you'll see that the app performs exactly as is. Now, if this was a non-trivial application, there's literally a couple of controls here, you would see a big difference as far as application startup is concerned. And also, the working set would be vastly better with .NET Native. The other thing I want to mention is this. You'll notice that in the modules window, you're actually no longer seeing the .NET framework modules being loaded. What you actually see are a reference to where the .NET framework assemblies would have been. The reason is this. Once the IL code gets compiled to architecture-specific code, there is no more framework or libraries that get deployed. So imagine a world where in the future you deploy your .NET application and you no longer have to worry about whether .NET framework is installed on the machine, and you no longer have to worry about deploying the libraries along with your application. So it's pretty much a deployment-free technology because everything is linked into the app. In fact, the example that I like to use is that if anyone's aware of C++ semantics when it comes to compilation, it's exactly the same model. When you enable static linking, it just links all the libraries into the single binary, and there's no framework, there's nothing to actually deploy as far as runtime is concerned. The only thing that's on the remote machine is a single, as I said, runtime called mrt100.dll, which is around 200 KB. Other than that, you don't have to worry about what version of .NET installed, nothing like that. It just works. Okay, one of the things I promised at the beginning was when you use .NET Native, the C++ optimizer can do amazing things. And I really do mean amazing things. This is one example of what it can do. Unfortunately, I don't have the actual source code with me, but I've got a video of exactly what the difference is between non-.NET Native and with .NET Native. This is a typical C++ textbook problem with the n-body simulation, where I will show you three stages of the demo. One, where it's just scalar, meaning the code execute on a single core, non-parallelized. The second one is it's vectorized on the single core, and the third one is it's vectorized and parallelized across 24 cores. So let me switch over to my other machine, and you'll see the difference. So here we go. This is scalar. Notice how my application moves. Now I'm going to change it over to it's vectorized, And now I'm going to switch you over to vectorized and parallelized. And in a second, you're going to see. And that is the performance difference that you'll actually get from the exact same code, right? So the difference is dramatic compared to what .NET can do today. And the beautiful thing about this is that you as a developer don't have to do a single thing. So imagine if you're writing a game or a CPU-intensive application, and then suddenly, by optimizing your code with .NET Native, your app performs that much faster, and it's that much more interactive without you having to do any work at all. So what actually happened there? This is the method that basically does the n-body simulation. All that happened was the C++ compiler detected that this for loop can be automatically vectorized and parallelized. So it took that code, and then it made all the optimizations on its own. And I'd say the most remarkable thing about this piece of code is how unremarkable it is. What I mean by that is, notice, I as a developer didn't have to mark up the code. There is no attributes, there is no hints to the compiler, there is nothing telling the compiler, hey, if you get a chance, please optimize this loop. It just works without you having to do any work. And I think that's a huge, huge departure from how you typically think about the problem of having to either decorate things with attributes or having to give the compiler a hint. The compiler automatically knows that this is parallelizable and vectorizable, and it goes ahead and just does that. As I mentioned, this is available now. It does require Visual Studio 2013 update to RTM, which was actually announced today. And then you can visit any of us at the Visual Studio booth. We'll be more than happy to actually, if you're trying to move your code to .NET Native, to help you out with any problems that you might have. And then last but not least, we have very eager folks back in Redmond who are both manning the forums and as well as the .NET Native at Microsoft alias, where you can send any suggestions, comments, requests, and so we can take a look at it. Before I move on, I want to just clarify something. As I mentioned, this is 4v1, .NET Native is available for store applications only. One of the most often requested features that I hear about is, what about WPF apps? Why can't I use the awesomeness of .NET Native, either zero deployment impact or the performance gains from my WPF or Windows Forms or console application? And the answer is this. Right now, we are looking at certain capabilities of .NET Native and trying to figure out how do we bring the same goodness to those applications. However, what we tried to do was really focus on a single scenario, which is store apps, figure out how we actually do this, and then bring the goodness over time to the other applications as well. So even though it's not available for desktop apps for V1, we will ultimately get there. Okay, while we are on the discussion around code generation, another very exciting thing that I'd like to share with you is all the work that we're doing to make your existing WPF and Windows Forms apps better. And this, you know, for this, you can just go ahead and download the latest and greatest .NET framework, and it just works. So I briefly hinted at the .NET Native discussion, where today we take source code, we compile it down to MSIL, and then code generation, whether if it's static or dynamic, happens towards the end and it generates machine code. For the next two or three slides, I'd like to focus on the code generation capabilities of the next version of .NET and how it really, really improves the performance of the application. What we did was we looked at the performance of how the just-in-time compiler works and basically rewrote everything. What I mean by that, we specifically looked at how the just-in-time compiler worked in the ASP.NET scenarios and also 64-bit scenarios. and notice that there are some major, major performance problems with the existing just-in-time compiler. And also, we couldn't take advantage of the brand new capabilities as far as hardware is concerned. So we rewrote it, and these are some of the micro benchmarks that we have running right now, which we're seeing improvements all along the chart. But I think the most impressive thing is the actual demo itself of what this looks like on for an existing application. So I'm going to switch over to a different machine. But I'm going to show you just how much better .NET is in vNext. And I'm going to run up an application that basically does a before and after. It's a WPF app. What you see happen is there are two versions of exactly the same app that come up. And I'm going to dock one to the left and the other one to the right. Now, if you notice, let me just get rid of one of them. I just did that. Let's try it again. So let me just quickly see if this is the one that I wanted for some reason. This is not working. Excuse me for a second. Okay, run demo, CMD, yes, go. Okay, for some reason, the new JIT is on all the time. But the demo that I was going to show you, I'll show it to you partially, was the fact that when I run this same app, it takes around 2.5 to 3 seconds for it to actually complete. And what it's doing is it basically goes and does a lot of parsing of regular expressions. The same app without the new .NET runtime literally takes several minutes to complete. And let me try it one more time and see if I can just... figure out what I was doing wrong here. 1 second, please. And since you don't want me, you don't want to see me typing, let me just be super lazy. Okay, let's see if this comes up now. Hopefully, I can actually show you. Yes, excellent. Okay, so now the demo is actually working. I'm not sure what happened. So what you see on your left-hand side is today's .NET, and I'm going to start the actual parsing of the regular expression. And then what you're going to see on the right-hand side is what's going to happen with the new version of .NET. Notice it took about 3 seconds to complete. And as I said, this thing will sit here for a long, long time trying to parse regular expressions. And so it's a huge, huge, huge difference that we're seeing as far as the performance is concerned. So how do we go about enabling the next generation just-in-time compiler? We actually focused on four different areas of the just-in-time compiler. The first one being throughput, meaning how fast does the compiler generate code? We spent a lot of time fine-tuning that and really taking advantage of the new architecture-specific code. The next one was around the code quality, which is around how fast is the actual code executed. And then last but not least, we really focused on consistency as well as predictability. What I mean is the fact that you really want to make sure that regardless of whether your code is running on x64, ARM, or x86, it has the same performance characteristics. Right now, this new just-in-time compiler, which we've codenamed RioJIT, is available for x64 now, which you can go and download as we speak. And what it also does is it allows us to create brand new innovations that we just could not do before because the previous JIT could not handle certain capabilities. And so what you can do right now is download the new just-in-time compiler and then try out your scenario. So I would highly encourage you, if you're having a performance problem with startup, for example, with your application, whether if it's ASP.NET app or a WPF app, you can go ahead and download the new JIT and run your app as is. You don't have to change a single line of code to make it go faster. The one thing I really would like to encourage everyone is, if you do have feedback, there is our alias. We have our just-in-time compiler team that is eagerly waiting to hear any feedback if you have problems with the new just-in-time compiler, or if you have any other feedback for that matter. Okay, so at this point, you might be wondering, are you guys doing just static compilation in .NET, meaning in the future, my apps will no longer need to JIT, or are you improving your existing JIT to make dynamic compilation better? And the truth is both. We are investing in both dynamic compilation, as you saw with RealJIT, as well as static compilation to make it that much better. What you're going to see with static compilation is we've been on this road where, for those of you who know of Engine, we've been doing Engine for a very, very long time. There are some fundamental issues with Engine, unfortunately, but you know, for the last 12, 13 years, we've been using Engine to essentially make .NET apps faster. However, one of the key problems with Engine is that it's brittle, meaning every time you service the .NET framework, you'll have to re-engine, and suddenly the performance of your apps completely go out of the door. What we did in the second phase was, this is with phone applications, we took the same Engine technology, and then we basically did a hybrid method where we compiled some of your code in the cloud and the rest on the device itself, and we got a lot of performance improvements out of that. But the thing that you see with .NET Native is we truly are going all the way static. And so if you know and love the C++ compilation model, we are using that model now to compile device applications. And if you think about the possibilities in the future with .NET Native, it doesn't matter if you write an application for a Windows tablet or a phone or maybe Xbox in the future, or if you guys remember, perhaps for those of you who are aware, at Build, we announced this Internet of Things initiative. For even smaller devices, having that additional perf is going to be fundamentally important to make apps faster. Okay. One of the things I'd like to focus on now is one of the most often requested feature for .NET is this idea of data parallelization. And officially it's called SIMD, which stands for single instruction, multiple data. And what it basically does is if you have a CPU intensive application, it really makes your app a lot faster. And I'll show you a demo of what that looks like. The nice thing about SIMD is that it's just exposed as a brand new .NET library, which you can download and get through NuGet. You don't have to go and rev anything. As long as you download the latest version of the just-in-time compiler and you get the NuGet library that goes along with it, you can simply use RealJIT as is. And you can see on user voice, it has received well over 2,000 votes because people have been clamoring for SIMD for a very, very long time. So what exactly is SIMD? Let's spend a few minutes walking through this slide so hopefully folks can understand why we made this significant investment in .NET. What happens today is most processors or the way applications perform is what's called SISD, which is single instruction, single data. As you see from the Y shape on the left-hand side, you basically have a single operand performing on a single stream of data. So for example, if you have a for loop, it operates on that same data or input every iteration of the loop. And one of the problems, of course, is if you have highly data parallel applications, you run into this pretty big bottleneck where you now have to basically figure out how do you data parallelize your application, which can get very, very complex very, very quickly. The idea behind SIMD is take the same single instruction, however, let it operate over multiple channels of data. So you can imagine now if you have a for loop in a single iteration of that for loop, the runtime can operate over multiple streams of data. And you're going to see, we've seen improvements up to 8x with SIMD for data or CPU intensive applications. One of the key benefits with SIMD is the fact that it auto scales. What I mean by that is, depending on the CPU instruction set, it knows what is the best instruction to fall back to and use the stat. So if the processor has the latest and greatest instruction set, it can really boost up the performance. However, if it can't detect the latest and greatest instruction set, it doesn't degrade and really make the performance of your application worse. So let's see what a demo of SIMD looks like right now. I'm going to switch over to my other laptop. And then run the app. So very similar to last time, this will launch two windows. For those of you who are aware of Mandelbrot, it's a classic computer science problem where you can basically parallelize each pixel on your Mandelbrot set. And what we're going to do right now is we're going to do a fly-through. So I'm going to start off by basically running this app without any parallelization at all. And notice the chunkiness. Imagine this being a user right now who's interacting with your application. It's not responsive, and also there is the user experience is just terrible. And the other thing that you notice is it's taking right now 17, 18, 19, whatever it is, seconds, a long, long time for it to actually to fly through this Mandelbrot set and get to a final destination. And yeah, there we go. Now, I'm going to enable SIMD, and this SIMD right here is using one type of instruction set called SSC2, which I'll explain more in detail. But when I do that, so this took around 29 seconds to basically fly through the Mandelbrot set, and let's see how long this one takes. So you can see it's still choppy, but it's much, much better than the previous time. In fact, that 20 seconds now goes down to somewhere around 11 seconds. So we already reduced the performance of the app from 26 seconds down to 11 seconds by using the SSC2 instruction set. And now I'm going to close this there we go. Now I'm going to use an even more advanced instruction set that's available on this machine. It's an AVX instruction set provided by Intel. And I'm going to enable SIMD again and see how this behaves. So that's around 4.5 seconds. So we went from 26 seconds with no parallelization at all down to about 12, 13 seconds. And with SIMD and AVX, we went all the way down to about 4 seconds. Imagine if you're writing an application right now, how using SIMD could truly improve the application performance. And it's not, you can just clearly see, it's not startup. This is actually a code execution that is being improved significantly. So what we saw there was, lower is better, by the way. So green is the best, blue is middle, and then purple is the highest. We started with the scalar, and then we switched over to SIMD using the SSC2 instruction set. And last but not least, we used SIMD, but with the AVX instruction set. And we have seen in our labs up to 8x improvements. Now I want to get a little more into detail about the different instruction sets. So most modern CPUs, this is an Intel-based processor, come with at least SSC2 instruction set. So you're going to see a massive improvement by just using the latest and greatest processors. If it's a truly advanced processor, then a lot of the, even laptops, this, as you can see, this is a laptop, come with the AVX instruction set where, as I said, we've seen up to 8x improvement as far as the performance is improvement is concerned. Last but not least, this is available in our preview. It got released again today, and you can go ahead and use it by downloading both the just-in-time compiler bits as well as SIMD. So how is SIMD exposed? So you're a developer right now. After this talk, you go back and you're like, awesome. Now I want to try this out with my app and see how, whether I can make it, take advantage of the improvements. First of all, after you have downloaded the just-in-time compiler through NuGet, you'll find this new package called Microsoft.bcl.simd. Once you've downloaded Microsoft the SIMD package, what you'll notice is that there's a single struct called vector, vector of T. And it has some of the canonical types, members that you can expect. And one of the key things that we have done in our runtime is, even though length is fixed, it's hardware dependent. What that means is that it allows .NET to auto-scale depending on what the instruction set is. For example, if the machine supports SSC2, length is 128 bits. If the processor supports AVX, the length is 256 bits. So you as a developer don't have to actually worry about whether if it's SSC2 or AVX. The CLR and the runtime and the BCL work together to kind of figure out exactly what is the best configuration for the app and automatically scale up or down depending on what type of processor it is using. Okay, now let's walk through a Hello World example of SIMD. Today, this is the canonical for loop. You basically get some value and store it in an array. Then you also get the instantiate a array of floats. And then you go through a loop, basically putting the increments into the array of values. How do you go about using SIMD in this case? The problem with this loop, obviously, it's unvectorized code. So you add one value at a time. And so if you have a processor-intensive app, it can really take a good chunk of time. With SIMD, it's actually not that hard at all. The main thing that you, as a developer, have to figure out is, how do I think about chunking up the parallelization of my data? So in this case, you can see I've declared, essentially, two vector of floats, and then you'll notice that the code looks quite different, where now you can basically add multiple values simultaneously using the SIMD vector code. And what that means is if you were to data parallelize this code yourself, it would be orders of magnitude more complex than it is to use SIMD in this case. As I said, you can go download the SIMD package as well as the runtime today. The one thing is the current package of SIMD only supports the SSC2 instruction set, meaning if you have a machine where you have AVX capabilities on it, you won't be able to take advantage of those right now. So if you are not seeing an 8x improvement, it's because we haven't quite implemented the code yet. Again, on our blog, we have this very detailed walkthrough of how you go and leverage SIMD in your application. Okay. We spent a good amount of time focusing on the runtime aspect of .NET and all the work that we're going to do in the runtime to improve .NET. Let's switch gears a little bit and focus on what we're going to do in the APIs to improve .NET. So one of the most attractive properties about .NET is that you have this nice, consistent, productive set of APIs. And so you can use the same set of code and skills across your desktop app, your server app, and also your devices app. And so you get to see the same APIs over and over again. So if you know how to use file, you know how to use it in any of these different types of platform. What we're doing is, if you've noticed, we are really starting to change the way we think about our libraries. Typically, we ship all of the .NET libraries in a single package every single time. And more, what we're going to do is we are going to release the .NET libraries as separate NuGet packages. And what that means is you as a developer get the latest and greatest as far as the .NET libraries are concerned. And so let's say you just downloaded .NET 4.5.2. Tomorrow you can go and get a brand new NuGet package that just works with that .NET framework as well. So you no longer have to wait for another ginormous release of .NET to be able to, for example, use SIMD. I mean, SIMD is a great, great example where we can rev the library independent of the runtime. So in the future, you can just take advantage of things like SIMD without having to wait for the next version of .NET. One of the other key investments that we're doing is, and I'll show you in a second, is this thing we're calling one class library, which is essentially the marriage of the classical class library and portable class libraries. And I'll show you a nice demo in a second. And then, obviously, at Build, we made a big announcement around universal apps, which is truly takes advantage of this convergence between all the different flavors of Windows. So if you're writing an application that uses universal apps, you'll be able to target the same app for Windows Store apps, as well as phone and other device factors as well. One of the other key benefits that you're going to see is because we're going to ship so much more frequently, you can give us feedback just as frequently on our APIs as well as our libraries. So with NuGet now, we're seeing a tremendous amount of feedback coming to the team, whereas previously it would take us up to 3 years to actually respond to that feedback. Okay. Now, specifically around portable class libraries, we have a couple of big announcements. The first one is PCL will now be available as part of Visual Studio 2003 Express. So today, you couldn't actually use PCLs in the Express editions of Visual Studio. So that's something that we've received lots of feedback about. And the other thing that, as I mentioned, is we really are looking at both the existing class library as well as PCL and unifying those two concepts into one to make it a lot easier for folks to be able to consume and port their code across the various frameworks. And I think the easiest way to see the work that we're doing as far as the class libraries are concerned is through a demo. Okay, let me go ahead and close Visual Studio and we don't need this anymore. So I'm going to open up the exact same solution that I had previously, but this one actually doesn't use .NET Native, just to make sure our compile time's a bit faster. So you can clearly see this is a Windows 8.1 store application. And in fact, the other thing that you notice is this is the helper library that is being used by this app. And it's also a Windows 8.1 class library right now. And let's say you as a developer right now decide, hey, I now want to also add a phone app to my solution. and I want to take advantage of the same class library previously. So how do we go about doing that today? Let's see. I right-click on my solution, select Add New Project, and see if we can find a Windows Phone app. And let's just go ahead and add a blank one. And we're going to call it Contoso Windows Phone. The next natural step, of course, is, you know, I'll go ahead and add a reference from my Windows Phone app to this class library, since that's what I want to use in my app. Before I do that, let me just drag and drop a couple of files here, since I don't want to rewrite the whole thing. And you don't want to watch me typing either. Yes to all. Yep. Okay. So let me go ahead and do that now. I want to right-click on my references, say add reference, just browse in solution, and I want to add a reference to my helper library. And of course, here's where the pain starts today. You have an existing app, you want to now build that app for other devices and other form factors, and suddenly you'll find out, oh, all your class libraries and business logic are bound to a single platform and can't be reused. So what do you do at this point? You recreate a brand new solution and start copying and pasting code all over to be able to reuse this code. With the next version of .NET, you no longer have to do that. The only thing that needs to happen is basically right-click on your class library. And notice right now it says Windows 8.1. Select Properties. And then on the library, select the Change button. And then what you notice here is all the available platforms that this class library can now target. And then within that, since we're building a Windows Phone app, select Windows 8.1 and then press OK. And then the first thing you notice is this changed from an 8.1 library to a portable library right now. So it means I can use the exact same business logic in both in my Windows Phone app and my Windows Store app. Once I've done that, I'll just repeat the previous steps, which is I want to add a reference to the my helper library, and this time it simply works. And if I were to build this solution right now, let's go ahead and build it. If I haven't made any mistakes, I should just go and build. Excellent. Then I'm going to set this as my startup project, and let's go ahead and launch the phone app now. And this is a really, really powerful model with the portable class libraries now really becoming a first-class citizen and with one class library. With simply a couple of clicks, I was able to convert my existing store class library into a portable class library to a point now I can just go ahead and use my store application that I had previously in my phone app, and I'm not sure why this is not resizing. This is supposed to resize. Let me... Let's try it one more time. See if it works. And if not, then we'll just move on to the next thing. And the other thing I want to point out here is previously in portable class libraries, you actually could not use things like WinRT APIs. Oh, there we go. Okay. I'm not sure what happened previously. But you can just basically interact with the app just as you do with the other app. And I think that's a really powerful model where you don't have to rewrite your code. You just use the same portable class library across both. Okay, the other thing that I want to focus on briefly right now is this idea of openness in around .NET. What you're going to see going forward is we truly are going to be open with everything that we do. We're going to be open with our source code. We're going to be open with our communication. We're going to be open with our documentation as well. So what we've done now is we have essentially what we call our .NET Insiders group, where we constantly share information back and forth, and we're getting lots and lots of feedback about the next version of .NET. Obviously, releases like Build and TechEd are a huge opportunity for us to get your feedback. And that's why after today's session, we would love to you to go download the bits and then play with it and tell us what you think of both .NET Native and PCL, as well as things like CMD. The other thing that you're going to see is today we released the .NET client libraries for Microsoft services, and those are all open source, meaning not only can you peruse the source code, but you can also contribute back. And more importantly, you can use the exact same class libraries for cross-plat scenarios as well. And last but not least, our partnership with Xamarin is something that's really taking off now. And in fact, at Build, we announced this big partnership with Xamarin, where if you are wanting to build your .NET app for both iOS as well as Android, through our partnership with Xamarin and the Visual Studio plugins, you can go ahead and do that as well, where we've made the experience a lot better, and you don't have to worry a lot about the licensing problems that were there previously. I mentioned previously that one of the things that we're doing now is, going forward, you're going to see a lot of the .NET libraries simply be released through NuGet. We are really trying to make .NET Framework a lot smaller so that you can get the kind of pay-for-play approach and only pay for the things that you want to. What you're seeing right now is this. Since we started to release our .NET bits, .NET Framework, ASP.NET, and other Microsoft libraries, combined we have 926 packages right now on NuGet, and we've had a combined number of 58 million downloads of NuGet. So it's really taking off. We're getting a lot of feedback, and I would highly, highly encourage you to engage on NuGet. If you don't see the functionality that you're looking for, please send us feedback. I mean, there's literally an army of people waiting to hear your feedback and so that we can help improve the product. And if you're curious, these are the top 10 NuGet packages right now as far as the .NET Framework is concerned. And the nice thing is some of those packages really aren't even created by Microsoft, but we service and bless them just like any other of our other NuGet packages. The last thing I want to wrap up with is this. At Build, we made a huge announcement around .NET Foundation. .NET Foundation is simply this new approach where we want to bring all the open source effort around .NET in a single place, and we want to nurture it and make it better. So up until now, we now have 25 very engaged partners in the .NET Foundation, where everyone from Xamarin to various other libraries are contributing their source code into the .NET Foundation. And we ourselves are obviously doing that as well. We released Roslyn, our C# compiler, into the .NET Foundation back at Build. We released the .NET client libraries for Microsoft services today in the .NET Foundation as well. And this is something that's going to continue on ad infinitum. So in the future, whenever we release a library, we're going to release it as part of the .NET Foundation. And this will just grow and grow and grow. But ultimately, what excites me most about things like the .NET Foundation is the promise of the future and the type of things that we can do. To give you an example, this is one of my favorite things. Well, we're calling it, this is not baked yet, so you're going to see lots of bugs and issues. We're referring to this as source code as documentation. So let's say today you go to Bing and you search for your one of your favorite APIs. Oh, I've got to be careful what I type in there. Okay, hopefully there's nothing bad. So I search for ArrayList. And, you know, I'd say Bing does a nice enough job. It gives you a little description. It also gives you a signature of some kind of what ArrayList looks like. So I, as a developer, say, great, let me actually go and see what the MSDN docs say. Okay, I see a signature there, I see the members, that's nice. And then I see examples. But you know what would be really nice if I could actually see the source code for ArrayList right within my documentation. Now imagine that you went and searched for an API and you can now see the actual source code for the API itself. And so what you're gonna see in the future is, as part of the .NET Foundation, all of our source code, you're gonna be able to navigate through our documentation. So you can forget about the days where we had tons of outdated docs and outdated samples, because we're gonna show you, for example, all the methods that use ArrayList, so you can see exactly how ArrayList is used. And in the future, the idea of stale documentation will start to completely go away. And of course, from here, you can completely navigate the rest of the .NET source code as well. And I'm pretty much willing to bet that you're going to find a number of very funny things and not very funny things in these types of comments, but that's for later. Okay, I want to leave you with this slide here. The reason why I want to do that is this. The next version of .NET is, I would say, one of the most radical, largest investments in .NET we've ever done. And that's the truth. We are moving the ball forward in every single direction in .NET, whether if it's for devices, whether if it's for services. We are, you know, my favorite word, reimagining .NET, but very, very respectfully. What I mean by that is, we understand there's a tremendous amount of investment out there when it comes to .NET. There are millions and millions of .NET customers out there. So this is the very beginning of our conversation with everyone. We're going to lay out our future of .NET in front of everyone so everyone can see where .NET is moving in the next few years. It's going to take us a while to get there. This is lots of different things that have to come together. But I believe this serves as a great roadmap for anyone who's wondering what is happening with .NET going forward. In fact, what we've done is we started the dialogue on our blog where... I didn't mean to do that. Go there. If you go to our blog right now, you can see that just a few hours ago, we blogged pretty much a lot of the content of this presentation, and we've included everything, and I mean everything that with a lot more detail that we went through today, including examples as well as various scenarios. And then just like today's presentation, this is our roadmap. We're going to publish this roadmap everywhere so you can hold us accountable or not accountable for what happens to the future of .NET. But as I mentioned, we are taking a brand new open approach to .NET, and that includes also sharing our roadmap with everyone going forward. In return, we have a favor to ask you. We have created 6 channels, and depending on which one's your favorite, where you can give us tons of feedback. So if you want to send us feedback on our blog, our personal email, Facebook, Twitter, user voice, please, our ask is go and evaluate the bits, send us feedback, and I can tell you the .NET team, there's about 134 of us, are eagerly waiting to see your feedback. But more importantly, I'd say this is one of the most important slides. I literally covered, you know, another segment of what's going on in .NET. There are 4 more, maybe I think I was told maybe 6 more talks happening on .NET throughout this week. I will urge you, if you're interested in much more detail as far as languages is concerned, for example, if you're curious what's happening with C# 6, or if you're curious about what's happening in ASP.NET vNext, please attend one of these sessions. Or if you're curious about how you do iOS and Android development with .NET, there's a lot more detail coming up during the next couple of days, and I would highly encourage you to actually go and attend those sessions. Okay, so with that, I'd like to wrap up this presentation, and thank you very much for attending. If you do have any questions, please feel free to either use one of the mics, or I'm more than happy to field any questions down here.